What's up, y'all? It's 10 at 3 time at Tennessee. How you doing? How are you? Hope you're well. Hope everything's going really well for you on this Friday, February the 13th, 2026. Wes Rucker, we got Lord of the Streams Tom Barclay in here, too, on a very busy.
It's been a busy one.
It's
been one of those Fridays.
I know, right? I just realized my glass cleaning wipe is right there. I'm going to throw that over there. Let's go on over. We got a lot.
Yeah, you got a lot of things to cover today. try to fit all of that in the 55 minutes we got here.
Yes, first things first here, of course, I guess we will get over to take a quick dip over there to just across town a couple miles away there in Knox Chancery Court.
Yep, we're in Chancery Court.
You can see right in there right now where Joey Aguilar and the NCAA are in their matching wits going tit for tat, going blow for blow in there. And we'll
kind of hear a little bit of the background noise there.
I think they're on a break right now.
Yeah, it looks like they're taking a recess at the moment, but they may start back here soon if they're all in place.
And, you know, we do have, you know, we're one of the pool cameras there, so we're set up there. We got Emily Ray Cochran's over there. We got John North, who was with us on the show yesterday. He's over there. And, you know, between the two of them, it's a lot of brain power. I think we're going to get a lot of information out of what's going on over there. Of course, we can't go live to them because, you know, they're sitting there in the courtroom.
Court is... Maybe not in session at the moment, but it's not we can't do hits in the courtroom. The judge would be very unhappy if we tried to do that.
We tried to give the chancellor an IFB to see if he would, you know, key us in on the live, the latest updates. But I mean, in all seriousness, there is the case going on right now. There is the argument going on for the injunction right now. We don't know much other than what we've seen so far, which is they're not going to have any witnesses. They've agreed to let this be ruled on the facts alone, I believe. So there's some questioning going on between both legal teams as well as the chancellor, obviously. And you can see both arguments kind of taking shape. You can see that, you know, Aguilar's trying and his team are showing, hey, this is how we believe exactly this is wrong. This is how we believe exactly how he would be harmed by this. We've shown financially, we've shown not just for financially for now, but for the future with NFL opportunities. Mm-hmm. They've started to put their case forward. And you've seen some pushback on the NCAA and from the chancellor on a couple of fair points, such as if this is one, what about the other 49 states? Because this, you know, has no connection to what's going on with Trinidad, Chambliss, and Ole Miss yesterday. That ruling, of course, Chambliss was granted an injunction, but and the NCAA can appeal and all those things. But that case was basically about classification of a medical redshirt. This is an entirely different matter. I mean, it's easy to lump them together because everybody's going against the NCAA right now, so put them all in the same pot. Not exactly how this is. This is a very different rule, and I would say this case has infinitely more bearing on the future of college athletics potentially, because if the chancellor here grants the injunction and says that this case is very likely to win on the merits and there's no need to wait for a permanent ruling, and this will be kind of a quasi-permanent ruling. It's significantly more than a TRO would be, but it's not
true. It's not
codified iron-proof law and all this. But basically, it's a much more it's a much stronger brand of drywall. Basically, is what it is. So
it gives it more.
It's not brick and mortar.
More substance to the argument, depending on which way it goes.
But obviously, it's a little thicker drywall in there. You know, so that's sort of how my really bad analogy of how I would describe it. But it's interesting because again, we got to separate two things here. On the one hand, you've got this specific case, the specific rules, the specific laws.
Yeah.
Is the NCAA violating the Sherman Antitrust Act? And it kind of looks like it is if you want to make the strict legal argument. So on the merits, this has a pretty good case here for Aguilar. Now, that doesn't mean that if this – regardless of whether this injunction is granted or not, there can be appeals. There can be, you know, there's a lot of ways.
Yeah.
The NCAA yesterday, in fact, knew that it was taking the L on Chambliss, and it left that court hearing before the judge had finished the ruling, which is, I don't know if I would ever recommend that.
Chancellors walk back.
Do we have to stand up here, too?
Have to stand up necessarily. Here, we can pop that audio back up here.
Let's see what we got. I'll shush here for a second.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to continue. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think we ended with a very impassioned defense of my client, which I mostly agreed with from my friend, Mr. Askew, that he is an inspiration, that kids do look up to him, that he is the model of hard work, believing in yourself, coming off the bench, starting from the bottom, working your way to the top. He is what makes college sports awesome. He's one of the best stories in college sports. He's an inspiration. He is an economic driver of the city of Knoxville. That is why we're here talking about restrictions on trade or commerce. That is all related and exactly the nature of the legal violation. And all of the things my friend said about my client are true. My friend omitted the fact that his client is the one here choosing to not let my client be eligible for one final season of college football, even though the rules that we all agreed to were four seasons. He's had three NCAA seasons. He wants number four. All these things are avoidable. They could have given him a waiver. They give waivers out all the time. There's players who are in their seventh, eighth, ninth year of eligibility because the NCAA chooses to let them. It does not apply the rules consistently, and so it's hard for them to stand on something like the rules are the rules, given the way in which they behave. They say
you're arguing this now. Is there proof of that in the record?
That there is proof in our brief about the seventh, eighth, ninth year of eligibility.
Proof in the record. Do you have proof in the record what you just said?
We're stipulated that those sources are part of the record, but they've given out seventh, eighth, ninth years of eligibility just in the last 2 weeks, and that's in our brief. It's in a couple of maybe footnotes 2 and 3 of the reply.
So you're getting a little
the Alabama player is a defensive lineman that Tennessee's going to go up against, who's the seventh year of eligibility. There was a Montana player, I believe, who got his ninth year of eligibility granted by the NCAA. My friend said these are the rules, and everyone agreed to the rules. The NCAA is a monopoly. That is conceded in this case. It's not contested. It's established by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's obvious. Standard Oil can't say, here's the price of gas, and those are the rules. Monopolies have unusual market power to coerce and constrain and to have adverse effects on commerce in the state. It really is all just a question. It's all question begging of whether this particular rule violates our state antitrust law or not. And we think it does. We think the question today is how likely is it that it does when you get all the evidence in? And I think this is the major issue.
Is it?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's not the standard of proof in a civil case, is it?
It's the standard of proof on a temporary injunction, Your Honor.
How likely, that's one of the factors to be considered.
Right.
The standard of proof is you have to prove in the preponderance of the evidence, correct?
To prove
very convincing evidence. And have you done either of those?
Your Honor, it's a question of law whether they violate the antitrust laws, and the question is whether that's likely.
Not a question of law is, under this statute, which says, which we've been talking about all day, or at least half a day, all arrangements, contracts, agreements, which this would be an agreement.
Correct.
Between persons or corporations made with a view to lessen or which tend to lessen full and free competition in trade or commerce affecting this state are declared to be against public policy and lawful and void. Would you say that that's why we're here?
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask you, I've asked you several times. How does their enforcement of these two rules that we've been talking about substantially affect this state?
It's a big question.
Because we have 10 Division I schools that are part of the creation of these rules.
In
the state,
okay.
In Tennessee.
How does it affect this state?
It restrains their ability to have former JUCO players play the full four seasons of college football. It affects those players. It affects players who want to come to Tennessee. It makes those teams less competitive because we were all admitting that we're replacing more experienced players with less experienced players. It affects the University of Tennessee, which itself is a major part of commerce in the state. It deprives them in this particular case of their starting quarterback. We put in uncontested evidence about the economic impact of the University of Tennessee football program.
Well, no. Let's talk about that uncontested evidence. As you said, you put in proof in your brief that our football team made X amount of dollars, correct?
Yes.
How did whatever they're doing cause that to go up or down? And how much did it?
We don't have causal evidence about the JUCO rule, Your Honor. I don't think that's the standard. The point is that
No. You're saying you don't believe that. I have to write a brief. I have to write a memorandum of opinion on what the law is compared. Now, there has to be some sort of drop or addition to the number that you have or the number that happened before in order for this to have an effect, does it not?
I think so, Your Honor. I'm not sure what the denominator is we're talking about.
What?
The denominator. Like, what are we talking about?
Well,
effect
well,
on the.
What I'm talking about is you say that this is how much the UT football is worth to the state of Tennessee, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, how much would it be worth without him?
Right.
How much?
I don't have the number. I think
you would have to go.
Right. No, that's a pretty tricky economic calculation to have
I can
precise.
I can put in there. I think.
Not that I know of.
This question here,
no.
I think, if I understand this correctly, you're going to have to show if the team is not good, how much impact does that have?
Exactly.
And you'd have to go back and look at years and judge for inflation based on the team's record, based on what the economic input would be in that, or economic
impact. No, we know that 2025.
But here's the thing, as we know, Tennessee fans show up.
But that's all we have.
Although they do, they do either way. But I mean, when you see October, November crowds when things are going well and they're not, it's a little different. Of course, you could also say these guys are bad right now, so I have to have a couple more beers per game, which would be more money. But I mean, in all seriousness, you do see, I do think that you can have a measurable impact on that. I don't know what it would be, but I do strongly suspect.
And that's the thing. That's with any the burden of proof, and when we're talking about any sort of court system here, they're going
to
want
hard
evidence, you know, like written in stone kind
of
things.
And
without that, then it doesn't rise to that burden of proof. They're going to rightfully question it.
And I'd be interested to hear from John North later, because I think this gets to, if you're making an argument, that this is not just in terms of fairness to the young man, but to the community writ large, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to the state, which is, this is nominally what a chancery, the state level court. So you're having to show the impact that it would have. That's how you're cutting into the Sherman thing. That's how you're cutting into the
antitrust.
That's how,
exactly.
Now it's only part of it, because the eligibility also would fall within that. But when you try to broaden this out, I don't know if I think you're, again, I don't want to speak for people here, because this is not what I was trained to do. This is not, I
don't think anyone has quite seen a case. I mean, honestly,
I did
these
not,
cases haven't.
Com law was the last law course that I took in college. And you know what? I got an A in that class automatically because I helped the teacher edit his book. He wrote the textbook.
I guess that's one way of doing
it. He wrote the textbook.
Yeah.
Like, he really did write the textbook that a lot of people around the country use. And he was coming out with the new edition of the book, and I found like a handful of typos in the book, and he was like, "You get an A." So I'm prefacing that
honesty, one in this room right now is at
correct.
All a legal expert.
Correct.
Specifically in a chancery court setting, which is a kind of a unique situation. Typically, these work through the district court. So, I mean, chancery is one of those steps on the way to the Supreme Court, but.
Correct.
Know,
if I'm sitting here, and this is I'm John Madden on a telestrator.
Yeah.
I'm circling the lawyer over here on the left and saying,
yeah.
See this guy over here?
Yeah.
He wasn't expecting this question from that guy over there, and he did not have all the answers ready for that answer, you know, because he clearly it's a good lawyer. If he was not expecting maybe that specific kind of pushback in this case. So
sure.
that's why you pay attorneys. They got to be able to think on their feet. They got to be able to take questions that they don't necessarily have the answer to. And, you know, not perjure, not lie, not and find their way to talk around these things. And that's what you do. But I think I've seen enough today that at least the ruling is the important thing, right?
For sure.
But you're seeing behind the bench here a fair amount of pushback throughout the day
you can see the tone of this chancellor here is, you know,
like this might
particularly
be
particularly skeptical on the claims being made that this is going to impact the, you know, the economy of the state.
Correct.
And universities.
And so I think you're at least seeing on the front end of this anyway, you're seeing some impressive judicial due diligence on this, because I do think, again, I still think he's got a pretty good case, but I say that as someone who's separating the two things, what is this specific case and what is this specific ruling versus what impact does this have on college sports going forward? And I don't know if that's necessarily this judge's job to adjudicate, right? But
it's also their job to grill in both cases. They're grilling both sides of this, this argument. You know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah. I guess let me see if I can rephrase that. Yeah. I'm trying to say that I don't think it's necessarily this judge's. It's in the main purview to think about the impact it would have moving forward, because you're judging a specific case. Was this party wronged? Was this party not wronged? But I think in the back of your mind, I don't know how, especially this judge admitted he is a football fan. He is goes to takes his children to Tennessee games. That's what they do. And so he probably has some sort of a vague notion of the impact this would have moving forward, not just in this case, but throughout college sports. Now, you could argue, and I think it's a fair argument, that from a Tennessee point of view, I've never been a big believer of, well, somebody else is going to do it, so I'm just going to do it first. Not the firmest moral ground to stand on, right? But in this kind of cutthroat world of college athletics, I understand it. I don't necessarily condone it. I do understand it. I think there's a difference in those two things, because this is eventually almost certainly going to happen somewhere. And whether it is here or somewhere else. Now, does that absolve Tennessee of potentially throwing another major wrench into college sports? No, just like it did with the Nico thing, because somebody else was going to do it somewhere at some point. Doesn't mean that you had to be the one to go to court there and do that. What you did was you were thinking about yourself and your team and fighting for your team in the short term. And it may have opened up some things long term that aren't great. But this is, again, why this is not a simple thing. And I'm not going to sit here and try to produce some 30-second, 60-second, 90-second soundbite telling you this is exactly what's wrong or exactly why it's right. No, this is a really muddy situation.
Oh, yeah. And that's putting it lightly, honestly.
And I think that you have to look at it contextually through that lens. And it's not a clean thing. It's got repercussions. It's got shockwaves that go across the country. And I think I'm on the side, to the extent my opinion matters, and to what extent it matters is entirely up to anyone watching, viewing, listening to all of this, whatever. But I do think that Aguilar is not in the wrong here with these legal arguments. And I think on the merits, it would be fine and okay and just if he were able to win this. I also think it would be potentially very bad for college sports in the long run. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I think this is simple, because I don't, because I think you're getting to the question of what's right for this person, what's right for that person, what's right for everybody moving forward. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think ultimately speaking, when we're talking about any sort of like ruling that comes out of a court, a chancery court, whatever, you know, the judges, they're by what they're called to do, they have to keep any sort of ruling that they put out or opinion they put out fairly narrowly tailored, right? It has to meet that specific situation. They're not just going to go making some sort of ruling that's going to have totally wide sweeping changes. However, when you have a narrowly tailored case like this and they do rule, say, if they're in favor of Aguilar here, I mean, that sets the standard for others that come after, right?
Yes.
And then that's when other programs look at that and go, okay, we have to abide by this in some way, else we risk having to, you know, fight a legal battle out on this one, right?
And it's true. And the repercussions of this that could go beyond, I know we're due for a break now, so we'll go ahead and get to that. But when we come back, I will, you know, it is college baseball opening day in Tennessee. You know, I've got my bag right down here and I'm leaving as soon as this show ends, heading hightailing it over to the newly revamped Lindsey Nelson Stadium for a baseball game. But this dovetails potentially into some very tricky baseball rules in particular. So we'll discuss that coming back. But before that, let's get to that break that we're a little bit overdue for. Are we do that? You got
to. Yeah, I can bring a rec. You ready
to go? I was
about
to say, you had that look on your face like,
no,
I don't know.
No. That was just me waiting for you to wrap it up so I could hit the button.
Then go ahead and hit that button, Tom. We'll be right back. You know,
yeah, this is a fascinating situation we're watching unfold.
And it's so wild because the things that were on, let's just think about the things that mm-hmm. are going on today in Vol land.
Right.
Kelly Harper came back last night as a coach.
I was all excited to talk to you about that.
And War won. Yeah, yeah. The Lady Vols put a whoop, and they gave Kelly what for coming back.
I was about to say, you win some, you lose some. But in this case, you really win some, and you really lose some.
That was putting old coach in a headlock and giving a little what for. So you had that going on. I cut earlier today, Rick Barnes thought that I just don't think there's any chance we're going to be able to get to now, talking about the LSU game tomorrow night,
sure.
Big game coming in, talk about Nate Amendt doing well, Jalen Carey struggles, bunch of that stuff going on. It's baseball opening day. Softball has already played today. And this case in here that's going on in the background here is one that could potentially have huge ramifications particularly the sport I'm about to talk about in a minute, which is baseball. And by the way, we're going to have a little bit of a weather update later on too.
Yeah, so Cassie will be joining us in here.
I'm glad that we're able to do that. We're going to try to do that on Fridays during the spring sports season, especially because if you're going to Tennessee softball or baseball this weekend, here's mm-hmm. what the weather is. And then obviously during football season, we'll do that too on Fridays.
30 seconds.
For sure. And we'll have our just incredible weather team come in here and give us some good stuff on, you know, if this game, you know, this is the kind of jacket you need to bring, because that's important.
It is. And especially on a Friday night.
Because I can pack as many jackets as I want, but if you're not media, you got to put it all in a tiny clear bag and you got to wear it, basically. So mm-hmm. you got to know what you got to wear.
You're limited space in those clear plastic bags.
That's what I'm saying. We're going to try to help you with that. Welcome back to 10 at 3 here on a Friday. Friday, what day we got again? Friday, February the 13th. Not quite the odds of February.
It better be Friday. Yeah, it's almost Valentine's Day too, so.
Yeah, and that's, oh boy. A little behind on that.
Are you ready this weekend?
Yeah. No, not at all. And I'm leaving from here to go directly to a baseball game. We'll be working pretty much all night on that, so
sure.
We're going to figure that one out tonight or in the morning. It might be a nice handmade Valentine's Day. I might be really screwing up Valentine's Day here. I got to get it together.
Best of luck to you.
She's 6 months pregnant. Get it together, man. It's been a busy week. There's lots going on.
Yeah.
The plumbing still is not sorted. We got stuff going on, but there's stuff going on, obviously, in Tennessee land, too. And with this being the start of college baseball season today, when I think about things like this situation here with Aguilar, and I think mm-hmm. about the situation, this would have been in particularly problematic if Charles Bediako had won his case. But baseball has a lot of people, a lot of players who leave early but never play Major League Baseball. Now, if they've left voluntarily, right, that's one thing. If they've left and said, I am declaring for the Major League Baseball draft, and they get drafted, they would fall under what I think is probably, you could call, the Bediako corollary, right? Like they're in that situation where they didn't win that case, so they're probably not able to come back. However, a lot of, and I mean a lot, of college baseball players come from JUCO, and they do that for many reasons.
Yeah.
JUCO baseball is very, very good, first off.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, out of high school, you can go to a JUCO out of high school, and you can get drafted whenever you want. If you go from high school to a Division I college,
mm-hmm.
you have to play 3 seasons or be 21 years old by a draft date, by a cutoff date, or you cannot be in the draft. So when you're committing, and they do this because if you didn't do this, it would be chaos. But I got to tell you, someone's going to challenge that at some point too, and that's going to be a problem when that comes down the pike. but and it's 100% coming at some point. That's another topic for another day. But right now the rules are so basically you can go to JUCO and you can get drafted whenever you want. But if you're a high school senior, you can get drafted. But if you go to high school, 3 years.
Yep.
And so, but what you can do is go to a Division I college, then go down to a JUCO and get drafted after 2 years. That and I there have been cases of people doing that. It's not incredibly common, but it does happen. But what happens there is if you go look across, just take a cross section of like the SEC, to say nothing of all the other conferences. In the SEC, where you would imagine there's a few more guys that come directly from high school and that because they're able to get the best of the best and all these things. Even they have a significant chunk of JUCO players. And if JUCO seasons don't count now, you will have a mess of players in their mid-20s who played in JUCO for at least one season, finished their career in college, did not play professionally, or did not get drafted, played professionally, but they didn't willingly leave. They thought they were out of eligibility, and they left, which is a completely different argument. And you will have chaos, chaos with college rosters. College baseball in particular could be absolutely ravaged by this situation. I see no way that this doesn't get extrapolated into a mess for college baseball.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's one step, two step, three steps, but I can see the end.
Once again, and that's, I mean, that's been the case for the last few years. It's just, we've been watching people take step forward, step forward. It's like it inches forward ever so closer to, you know, just this kind of complete reworking of college sports altogether. Right.
Right.
And like, period.
And if you think about it, so you've got guys, they come to JUCO, two seasons, then they play two seasons at Tennessee. Then in the 20-round draft, they don't get drafted. So even if they go play in the minors, they did sign a professional contract, but only on the assumption that they did not have eligibility. Now, it would not be everybody, because if you leave after your junior season and you didn't come back to play a senior season, you would not, I don't think, in the strict legal sense, qualify, because you, like Bediako, could have come back knowing the rules, or could have come back and you didn't.
Yeah.
But if you were a senior, and there are players who absolutely could help even some of the best college baseball teams, guys who, or at least better than some of the options that some teams have in some positions, that absolutely would fall under this rule. They absolutely would say, legally speaking, I didn't get drafted. I obviously would have come back to another year of college if I thought that was an option, but I don't think that it was.
It's a very confusing set of options they've got there, actually.
And so you can see very quickly, like it's part of this job, I think, is you look at not only, you don't look at, it's not only what's going on in front of me. It's if I say X, what's Y? If I say 1, what's 2? If I say 1, 2, and 3, what's 4, 5, and 6? And if Aguilar wins this case, some sports in particular, I would say, and also, you know, to a much smaller extent, basketball, you'd see a few guys here and there. It does happen, not often, but it does. Baseball in particular, and maybe softball.
Yeah.
Because softball doesn't really, I mean, they now have pro leagues, but it's very small and not a lot of people play in it. So you may have a lot of instances there, too, where, hey, I graduated 2 years ago. I would have loved to have played two more years of college softball, but I couldn't, and it wasn't a rule. So I'm sitting here, you know, working at this investment firm or whatever I'm doing, and I'm still in shape. I want to come back here and play college softball for another couple of years. I can get some NIL cash. Hey, I want to do this. So that's... that's how confusing all of this gets. And that's why I'm saying I don't think it's the job. I don't think it's the job of these people necessarily to care about what's going on moving forward. But I do think it has to at least go into your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, I am very, very happy that I am not a judge. Let's see here. I'm getting a couple messages. What's going on? Yeah,
I see there was a movement in the courtroom there in the chancery court. They're all up, and the chancellor walked out there. So
I think there is a chance. And again, you'll have to excuse me on this because we're going we're going live while all of this is happening. So we're getting news essentially as you're getting it. Basically, is what we're doing.
They're all kind of filing out now. So I think whatever's happened, it looks like we're maybe done for the day here.
And it's I think that's true. I think what I heard earlier here is there will be no ruling from the bench.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Now the TRO has been extended until an opinion has been reached and released. So the judge Hagerty is gonna go out there. It's done for the day. Gonna guess go home for the
there's
weekend.
A lot. I mean, there's
think
gonna
on
be
it,
so much to mull over here. And once again, that's what I was saying. They're gonna grill this on both sides here. They're gonna look at the arguments both have here and try to come to some sort of conclusion or opinion on this very murky situation.
And I will say, again, the ruling is the important thing, but after you saw some of the odd behavior in the courtroom in Mississippi yesterday with some emotions from the judge and some really...
That does get a bit odd. When you start seeing the judge emoting out there, it's a little bit different, and
if I can be honest here for a second, as someone who is a very, proud Southerner. I'm just going to come out and say it. As a proud Southerner, it's things like that yesterday that caused people to say some of the things they say about people from our part of the world. And that, when I see these things, I'm full candor, full disclosure. Sure. I wince because it's like, you're part of the reason why people think this about all of us. And it's not, and on a happier note, I think what you've seen from the judge in this case, at least on the front end,
is
professionalism. You have seen a judge who has asked some very sharp questions of both sides, a judge who has, despite what you could very clearly argue, and the NCAA did this, the NCAA before the hearing even started, the NCAA was saying, oh, we're right in Big Orange Country here. They were putting their thumb on the scale right quick. And I was thinking, boy, if the judge sees this before you get started, that's not going to put him in a good mood.
Probably not.
But we said the things, and I'm not taking them back. I said the things I said about the Bediako case because in that specific case, there was donations made to the university. He was paid by the university to speak there and give some guest lectures and things. And his wife was representing a player, a former player from that program in a very serious, murder case. So, and that was happening all at the same time. Yeah. And so in that specific case, I said, okay, there's a certain extent of local judiciary stuff that it's just really hard to avoid someone who's got a connection to somebody somewhere. But that was a bit much. And that case did, thankfully, get moved from one judge to another. And I don't know if that impacted the ruling. We'll never know. Maybe the same judge would have said the same thing. But I just, that judge making a ruling either way was going to be an issue. And make no mistake about this, too. The judge in this case making a decision either way is something that's going to be a little bit uncomfortable. That's part of the job.
Yeah, I said this is a novel situation. This has not come up in a courtroom before.
No, and this is why I have a tremendous amount of respect for these people because people know this judge. This judge is admittedly a Tennessee football fan. So no matter what ruling is made here, you're either going to be judged by a lot of your peers, fairly or unfairly, if you side with Aguilar in this case. And if you side against Aguilar in this case, boy, you talk about persona non grata in some social circles, perhaps. I mean, these are the stakes and things like this. Yeah. And I got a lot of respect for people who know the consequences of things and put their neck out there anyway. And, the judge could have kicked this case somewhere else. And hey, if I will be honest, part of me will even wonder if Aguilar wins this case, does, we talked about John North yesterday, does the judge's connections to Tennessee
get called into
impact
question?
This, and yeah. would that yeah. impact the appeals process? Now, what exactly. I think is the judge, and I think what you're seeing here, again, would love to have John North in here. But
we
I
will
think,
have, but he's out there right
he's
now.
He's out there right
he's
now.
He's trying to wrap it up
but
so
I,
he can get
but
into
I,
the
I know,
shows tonight.
I know enough to know this. Mm-hmm. Judges who know that a case has a really good chance of being appealed will go out of their way to be as meticulous as possible to shrink the possible reasons for an appeal being successful. Because no judge wants to make a ruling and then have another judge overrule them above them, right? Like, think about that. Nobody in any form of professional life or personal life wants that to happen. You never want to make a decision as a figure of authority and then have someone above you go, nope, you're wrong. That's awkward. Nobody likes that. So fair. judges, I think, yeah. do a really, for the most part, do a pretty darn good job mm-hmm. of asking specific questions, very specific questions, to say, okay, I know how this could look, so I'm going to make sure I ask this, so on appeal, they can't say I didn't consider this because I did. That's the kind of, I mean, again, all a personal opinion here, but I think I have a sneaking suspicion that good friend of the show, John North, would agree with me on this. I think he would. I don't know that he would. I think
well, we can
that
ask
he
him.
Would.
Maybe bring him, you know, and you Monday know, or Tuesday.
One thinking? Of the, oh, yeah. maybe have to now. And you yeah. know, one of the things that I love the most about that guy mm-hmm. is he would step right into this room right now, and if he did not agree with me, he would not hold back, and he would say that I just said something really dumb.
I mean,
and
man,
that's what I love about it. He would sit right there.
If he told me to my face that that's dumb, I would be like, you're absolutely right.
He would
John
sit Wilson. Right there. He would sit right there and go, hey, whippersnapper over yeah. here. That do you know who I am? And when I say something, it means something. Like, look at my resume. Look at all these awards I have that I never talk
sure,
about.
Sure.
Look at how much I've done across the country with reporting. I mean, he's an absolute superstar. We're so lucky to have him here. And he would come in here and say, nope, that's mm-hmm. dumb. I love that. I love that because I think, again, I'm happy that the judge didn't just make this like a good old, you know, episode of Hee Haw, basically, where we're all laughing and, hey, NCAA's in here in unfriendly territory, you
I
know. Because I got strong vibes of that yesterday.
I watch, you know, it's very – this judges and judges, chancellors, you know, all the court officials essentially, they're very stern folks for the most part, very – but. And they have this kind of like, I don't know, like intent behind you can feel that they're trying to exert a little bit of pressure maybe on the other side of the bench. But in all cases, I feel like they're ultimately being fair and they're trying to consider, you know, all angles of the, you know, the case as it stands, and, you know, based on what they know at least.
I just like to see, after what we saw yesterday, mm-hmm. I like to see a judge who and again, I say this before we go to break, I'll say this. I think there's always a chance that because we're doing a show live right now, this is one of the beauties. It's the beauty and the curse of live broadcasting, right? Yeah. Is that something incredibly important could have happened over there and the judge could have made a fool of himself and I didn't see it. And what I saw, I liked. And I'm sitting here talking about how good it was. And then you go on social media and somebody else goes, did you miss
someone,
these
yeah.
10 other
Once
things?
Once again, this is why
I'm
we
like,
need John North
I'm like,
here
this was why I was watching.
He has intimate knowledge of pretty much every one of these yeah. judges and chancellors out
While
there.
While I was yeah. watching, it seemed like I was impressed with the professionalism. So, again, yeah. we'll see. But speaking of professionals, we're going to have a professional in here in just a minute after we step away from break. We're going to have our own Cassie Nall come in here and talk to us about some weather, because Tennessee baseball opens really in about an hour, less than an hour. First pitch, 4:30 today, 1 o'clock tomorrow, 1 o'clock Sunday.
Sure.
Let's talk about what we could see Ooh. With that. If you're taking okay. – what kind of jacket do you want to take over there to Lindsey Nelson Stadium?
We'll find out.
We will discuss that in just yeah. a second. Be right back here on 10 and 3. Secret time. It's secret time.
It is secret time, and part of secret time, I'm going to go let Cassie in.
And we're going to go get Cassie in here during secret time. I thought for a second there, I thought my IFB was acting up. See, these are things we can talk about during secret time. Now we're good. I think it was just a little bit of a cord being unplugged situation. But I think that this whole thing, hey. We're
five for secret time.
Oh, and you can see right there. That one right there. Perfect. See, this is the one of the neatest things about what we do. I try to warn everybody, though, that this is live for some people, so some people see it and some don't. Just kind of depends. Mine do if I stretch really, really far. Like, these are... Let's put it this way.
And Cassie, can you talk into your mic right now?
Is amazing. Hello. Do you want me to pull the mic up, or is this far enough down? Or
probably up a little higher, probably.
Yeah, just.
I've actually not been in this room yet.
Sounding good there.
I don't know if it's quite as nice as y'all's special super duper weather room.
But I think this is a little better in some ways.
I see that super duper weather room every time. I'm like, God, there's so much stuff
there
in there. Sometimes I'll be honest with you. This is full disclosure.
Uh-huh.
When nobody's in there, sometimes I walk in there, but I never touch anything.
I can show you how to push the buttons if you want.
But you can't. I'm a toddler. You just can't. all these buttons right here.
Yeah.
It's like they're staring at me in the face to just.
You just want
to just push them.
Are you the guy that gets in the elevator and just like does all the floors?
As a kid, I absolutely would, without question. There's no question that I would do that. And still to this day, I kind of think about it. But
those are called intrusive. 20 thoughts.
20 seconds left, by the way.
A little impulse control I've learned.
That's good.
Just a little. I mean, not all the way, because if you can't be a kid in some ways,
yeah,
what's the point of any of this?
Let's have fun. So we're talking Vol baseball weather forecast.
Stand by, y'all.
Welcome back to 10-3 West Rucker with Tom Barclay in here. And because I did not, you know, I've spent the first 40 minutes trying to act like I know something about legal things when
yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
we were both
pretending to be John North, but no one can.
And listen, if I'm going to sit here and pretend to be, yeah. I'm not going to pretend to be two things during a show. If I want to pretend to be a legal analysis expert,
uh-huh.
then I'm not going to pretend to be a weather expert in the same hour, because that, even for me, that's a bit rich.
That's too many hats.
Yes. We do have our own Cassie Nolan here. Cassie, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. I love that we're going to be able to do this now on Fridays going into, it's really, really fun for baseball, softball season, especially because, you know, people got these little clear bags.
Mm-hmm.
I can bring whatever jackets I want to the press box. I could bring 10 bags,
yeah.
But most people getting into the stadium, there's restrictions on what they can bring in. So what kind of jacket they're bringing, especially early in baseball or softball season, that matters quite a bit, right?
Yes.
Because things can go, I mean, you know.
It can change a lot.
A lot, very quickly. And it's been really interesting because it, you know, had been very unseasonably cold.
Mm-hmm.
Then was very unseasonably warm for a little bit. What's going on this weekend? Is it closer to normal?
Well, temperature-wise, yes. And today is a beautiful day for that first pitch of their first game.
Looking forward to Covenhill Park right now.
Look at the sunshine.
And just a mile down the road from there is where the baseball, where Tennessee will play today. So it's
we can look out at
beautiful
there.
And, it is beautiful. Yeah. It's like perfect, I think. Goldilocks weather, mid-50s.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to call it that. Although, as we go throughout the innings, it is going to start to cool off. Tonight's our first 6:15 p.m. sunset, so you got a little while longer than you did yesterday to get to enjoy that sunshine. But that's your baseball forecast for tonight. You'll probably, if you don't need the light jacket now, I would definitely take one with you this evening, because those temperatures will cool off quickly once the sun goes down. We do have northeasterly winds that are a little gusty. So we'll see if that affects any of the pop flies.
A little breezy.
That's in that stadium in particular, that wind can change very quickly.
Uh-huh.
When it does, I mean, it's not Wrigley Field, but when that wind changes, it makes fly balls very, very interesting in there. Because it usually kind of blows out to left field, but sometimes uh-huh. it swirls around. And
mm-hmm.
it's people call me Wind Guy. I don't know if you
is that, that. Is that a nickname?
Rucker? Among the Tennessee baseball media, I am often... I think in a mocking way described as Wind Guy, because I always get there and I look at the flags before the game and I always mention, mm-hmm. this is what it looks like the wind's doing today.
Yeah.
Because in baseball, that matters quite a bit. Balls are in the air for 3 hours, right? You want to know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
That's also the old baseball player in me looking up to that stuff before every game.
I mean, true. You've got the experience in that realm.
Because the ball can fly out of that park or it can come in and be a different one.
Yeah.
So, but if I'm leaving, this is just for me personally, I might not be able to leave until like 11.
Mm-hmm.
12, depending on what I got to write from the game today. So are we going to be down below freezing by that point?
We're going to get down to around freezing overnight, so it won't be at 11, but it will be by tomorrow morning. It will be chilly when you leave tonight.
And then for the 1 o'clock temporary. They've been set for 1 o'clock, I guess, on Saturday and Sunday. So is it anything coming in this weekend that we need to be worried about?
Saturday's not too bad. We'll have increasing clouds through the day, temperatures in the mid to upper 50s. So again, still feeling nice, but you're not going to get as much warmth from the sun because of the clouds increasing. Mm-hmm. So you still might want that light jacket. I'm always cold, so I always take the jacket. We will have some light sprinkles maybe later in the afternoon. That'll be all we get on Saturday. Sunday, though, right now looks very wet.
90%. That's...
Yeah.
So it basically, this means if you've got a ticket for Sunday, you need to, again, head on a swivel always. Because,
for sure.
And again, I'm not, if you're a baseball fan, I'm not saying anything you don't know here. But even though Tennessee can play on turf, so they can play more games than most people can, because as long as the field's deemed safe to play on, they can, mm-hmm. It can absorb a little bit of moisture. The stuff's made out of good stuff these days. But they still will occasionally, if it, Sunday's forecast looks bad, they might play two on Saturday. So mm-hmm. that's always an option. And that's part of baseball, right? Sometimes you show up and the game lasts 2 hours. Sometimes you go there and it's raining and you're there for like 12 hours, right?
Yeah.
It's part of it with baseball, but it's looking like it's not so bad. I think we've all seen mid-February weather around here that's worse.
Oh, 100%.
Yes, and Cassie and I know for sure.
It can be a mess here, but I think on Saturday is going to be your better day for the two games. Sunday is going to be pretty soggy, but as of now, we don't expect thunder. So at least that's we're not good. Talking about lightning problems, but it does look like a consistently wet day. Maybe up to an inch of rain, too, so we'll have to see how well that field drains.
Ooh, yes, they might play a little bit earlier on Saturday as well. But if there's no thunder or no lightning, because it's lightning within a 5 mile, I believe,
lightning
radius of the
five
stadium.
Is what we called it.
Mm-hmm. Lightning within five means a 30-minute delay.
Yeah. Yeah,
and between the last lightning strike. And so there's times where you're sitting there watching the clock and it's 23, 24 minutes, and then you see lightning and you go,
like, oh, no.
You can just hear a groan from the press box, like everybody, oh, yes. And there's times like, all right, well, what's on Netflix? Because I'm going to be sitting here for another 30 minutes now. So mm-hmm. that's sort of sometimes what you got to do.
The players are like, let's get warm again.
And the players are in the old days, they'd be playing cards in the clubhouse. Now they're probably playing mm-hmm. video games or whatever it is they do, because that's, what they can do now.
They're playing Mario Kart over there.
Yeah,
I know that actually did happen, if I remember correctly.
They do have game consoles and things in there, but normally, being young people these days, they're just doing this the entire time.
Yep. Probably, yeah.
That's what they're doing most.
Posting on social.
But that's, again, I love that we're going to be able to have this feature on Fridays now, because, and during football season, obviously, big deal too. But I think especially during baseball, softball, because it's just, especially early in the season, you just never know. So
we're happy to help.
Thank you so much.
You are very welcome
for joining us today. That's great. I love that we're doing. I know you got to go for four.
Yeah, so you can
go. You're good. You're good.
Thank you very much.
We're so informal here. You can just walk on out. You're good. Thank you for being here, Cassie. Thank you.
No problem.
Really enjoy this. I really enjoy being able to do these things.
I like being able to take the shot of people just leaving the room every single time.
Yeah, this is how formal we are here. We're basically the mullet of WBIR's programming is what we are. We are
business in the front, but we're party also, in the back.
Listen, we can also comb that straight back and go out there and party a little
there
bit,
is at
right?
least one person in this newsroom that has a mullet.
Yes, there is.
And he has been on this show.
He's been in this room before, and that's, yes, and it is. And it, I, he claims that it is an ironic mullet.
It may have started out that way. I think he's fallen in love with it, to be honest.
I think Boss Man's starting to really, really like it.
I think so.
I think that's just kind of, he's mullet guy now. That's what he is.
That's just who he's going to be from now on.
But I love that nobody else can really do this. We can bring in John North to talk about the legal stuff. Then we can bring in our incredible award-winning spectacular weather team and ask them, hey, by the way, what's going on this weekend? If you're going to the game, what do you need to know?
Yeah.
We can do all these things. And while doing all that, we also have a live stream of court while it's going on.
Yeah, it's so flexible here what we're able to do these days.
And we can hit buttons over here and go all over town with cameras and look at things too. There's so many things we can do. But listen, I think the important thing to note here is that I am sorry that we were not able to get to basketball talk today, because there is.
I mean, if you got three minutes, you can hit the major point. I mean, we did.
Okay, let's see here. Yeah. Cliff Notes version. Last night, Kelly Harper comes back to Knoxville. Gets what for by Kim and
just
the Lady Vols.
Absolutely, like a reverse of what happened the previous game.
Just short of a hundo. And again, Mizzou's building that program and dealing with a lot of injuries right now. But obviously, the Lady Vols did not have the Paldo show, or at least half of the Paldo show, going on with an injury there. So took care of business. That was one that, boy, that was that was a big old claymore they could have stepped on and they didn't. And
the best way to go about it, honestly, to prove otherwise.
Yes.
I guess.
That thing was faced toward enemy and locked and loaded, and they sidestepped it, thankfully, or leapfrogged it. Whatever they did, they didn't step on it, and that was important. And then for basketball, I'll probably drop the barn stuff maybe in the show notes below this today, because I have to go directly to baseball from here.
Yep.
So someone else will be posting the show, but then I can go back in later today and edit the show notes and put the Barnes video in there with him talking about everything that he talked about today.
Do you want me to include that into the post show?
There's a lot going on. It's a big weekend, and with the Aguilar stuff, I court will be, I guess this hearing, there will be no ruling from the bench or no finding from the bench. I don't know the exact terminology there. They will not be releasing that today.
Yeah, so stay tuned on
the,
that one.
The chancellor judge is going to go home, going to contemplate this, going to figure out a ruling. You definitely want to cross T's and dot I's on this.
Yeah.
I guess a bad joke would be, hey, cross your power T's. But, you know, there's – because the NCAA is trying to say that it's you know, that old Rocky Top ruling. But that's going to come soon. And we'll have lots to discuss there, and we'll wrestle John North back in here once that ruling comes, and we'll say, hey, John, what does this mean? What's the next step if the NCAA is going to appeal? What's the timeline on that? Where are they going to send that to? What judge is potentially would be in front of that? How quickly does this go from, you know, basically a permanent thing to like, hey, now there's going to be no way to kind of undo this? You know, there's not going to be enough time to undo this before the season starts. So, and then question is, do you do what they did with Pavia and go ahead and play him or, you know, there's a lot of questions left on this. There's what you would call a lot of meat left on the bone, a lot of meat left on this drumstick. So we're going to get to that. We're going to talk, obviously, a big basketball weekend again, got games, a couple of them, got a bunch of baseball to discuss on Monday. Really looking forward to seeing those guys this weekend and telling you what I see on that on Monday. But until then, y'all be good this weekend. Hear the Rick Barnes stuff here in just a second, and we'll see you in 71 hours.
After going back and watching the tape, what were kind of the biggest things that stood out for the Mississippi State game?
A lot of good things. Then when they went on the 18-0 run, a couple turnovers that you can't have, and we did miss some shots through there, missed some free throws, and allowed them to get feeling good, and they made some threes and cut back into it, and even through that time, for the most part, we executed and got the look that we wanted. We just didn't make it, but it was the pick six turnovers that you know, there's nothing you can do about it, and in terms of trying to defend it other than taking care of the basketball, I thought the effort was good defensively. Still can get better, which we're going to keep trying to get better with it, but overall the effort was there.
How does LSU challenge this team defensively?
Well, again, great respect for Matt. You know, they've had to deal with injuries, which always sets everybody back, and just the fact that they continue to play really, really hard. He's going to have them ready to play like he always does, and they will do some different things defensively that will present problems, and if we don't take care of the ball, they'll take advantage of it.
You guys have given up leads. You've also rallied from down double digits to win some games. What does that say about the team on both ends of that spectrum?
Well, that's basketball in some, because, you know, when a team gets down, you know, they're going to get aggressive, you know, start maybe some teams just put their heads down and just start driving, trying to get to the foul line. Trying to get you to foul, and some teams might just start coming down, shooting threes and start making them. And then on the other end, you still got to, like the other night when they made that run, we had great shots. We didn't make them. You know, we missed free throws, didn't make them. And so momentum can change. And when you feel like you're coming back, you get a team on its heels, you know, you feel good, and you're going to stay aggressive. But the other night when that was happening, you know, Nate really stepped up and made a couple of really good plays there at the end. But it goes back defensively. You've got to, and even the threes they made, one of them was definitely a defensive breakdown, you know, and it was because of a missed shot, just didn't get back and match up the way we need to. I've always felt it. Basketball is a game of runs. I believe in every possession is important and how quickly it can turn. If you start taking shots you shouldn't take or turn the ball over, I've always believed that your defense gets the lead for you and your offense has to keep it. But if you're not making shots, the game gets tough. It really does. It gets tough.
Going off on that, how much has it helped this team moving forward that they were able to withstand that run and not let it kind of spitball and be able to, like you said, Nate kind of taking over and be able to withstand that?
Well, I would like to think our guys understand that we're in a league that are so many the teams are so well coached and so many good players, they're not going to quit. They're going to keep playing. So when you talk about a big lead in the first half, there's so much time to go back. You know, the three-point shot, too. I mean, you can be up 12 points and come down and get good shots and miss them, and they go down and hit two threes. It's a six-point game, two-possession game. And so it's basketball. But the mentality part, momentum's a big part of it, too. That's why you've got to – there's a standard that you've got to play with every day, and especially, I think, defensively, we – you know, coaches can't coach making shots. We can't. I know players want to make shots, but if they don't, you'd like to think that we're going to work at trying to get a, you know, an offensive rebound, but sometimes you can't. But on the defensive end, when you're not making shots is where you really can't have breakdowns, and the biggest part is you cannot turn the ball over and let them get down and get easy buckets. But when you have a lead, we tell them, you know, and players do have a tendency sometimes to relax because they look at a 15, 18-point lead, they start playing the scoreboard, and you can't play the scoreboard. You got to play yourself, and you got to play your opponent. You got to play the clock. You got to play all of it. Some of it's maturity. Some of it is. And some of it's a lack of maturity. So we still, every day, we're teaching, trying to continue to teach these guys about the game and how quickly it can turn on a dime on you.
There's been a lot of discussion about Jalen Carey trying to find some consistency. He was in the gym last night getting some shots up. What does that say about him, like his work ethic and trying to find that consistency?
Well, I think he sees it more and more every time. I don't think there's any question. When he sees film, you know, we're talking about him playing with more speed. And I think most players, when they play the game, if you ask them right after the game, most players would probably tell you they played hard. Then I think when they see the film, I think they're shocked because I don't think they don't want to play hard. But it's a hard game to get out of your comfort zone. I mean, it really is. You've got to want to really push beyond and fight through fatigue. You got to fight through. I mean, everybody's out there playing, but there's a level you got to get to, and then you got to push through it. You got to keep putting. I think Jalen's trying to figure out how to do that. And the only way he's going to do it is by a work ethic, and it's not in games, it's every day in practice. You know, you're going to always come back to your habits. I've seen very few guys that can flip the switch when it comes game time, and even if they can do that at some point during the game, they're going to plateau, and if they haven't put the work in to fight through that, they're not going to be able to fight through it. So it goes back to your daily habits.
What did you see from Nate in the first half, and how did he put two halves together?
I thought, again, Nate, honestly, I thought he was tired because he's put a lot of time in. He works hard. People are trying to be physical with him from the get-go. He can't even make a cut without guys trying to hang on to him. But he's working harder defensively. But even with that, he still impacts the game. And at the end, when we were hitting that skid right there, he was the one that stepped up and made some good offensive plays for us.